Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, the podcast where we cover all the pop culture we love to hate, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. I'm looking at you, Jax Taylor. I'm your host, Ryan Bailey. Folks, what is up? It is So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is your pal Ryan, and this is your Wednesday episode. We keep chugging along. Listen, I want you to listen to this podcast. Of course, I want you to listen to all my podcasts, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring up another podcast today. And that, of course, is, I didn't even know Howie Mandel had a podcast. I brought this up yesterday, but it wasn't some weird April Fool's Day joke that was 2 weeks late. Tom Sandoval gave his first sit-down interview with Howie Mandel. Of course, I mean, you know, hard-hitting. And it was exactly what I thought it would be. You know, it would be super funny if it wasn't so sad. I will say it even deepens the chasm, I think, between Tom and Bravo right now, because he revealed so many details. I can tell you he got a couple of them wrong, including trying to break up with Ariana on February 14th, Valentine's Day. I'll just start that off right there. He did not do that on that day. I don't know if he's gotten his dates confused, but he did not try to break up with Ariana on the 14th of February. Okay, now I'm going to do probably a full podcast breaking piece by piece down, but I want to give a couple of thoughts right up top. And by the way, we have this, God, what a perfect episode for today. We have a new friend to the show, Lauren Clayton, and she is an ex-forensic therapist where she did personality profiling and she would take assessments for ex-cons who were recently released from federal prison. And she does so much more than that, which we talk about. Now, I want to point out this interview, we're very careful, and she's so amazing because right up top, she's like, hey, I just want to know, you know, let everybody know, we can't diagnose anybody. That's completely not what she does, what she's about, and nobody really can diagnose somebody, just like nobody can self-diagnose themselves, right? But we talk a lot about ideas and potential things and characteristics of certain types of behavioral issues. And I found it just so fascinating. I told you guys last week, I did this last week because I was starting to look for more of a language in how to talk about these people that, I mean, especially Sandoval, who I was just really disappointed in. I was trying to think of, like, you know, even in myself, like, how do you forgive people like this? How do you, it's very interesting. And I feel weird for Tom in certain ways, because you get this sense where he just can't let it go. He's so used to being liked that this feels like it has rocked his foundation. Not the breaking up with Ariana and not the relationship with Raquel. This, the fact that we all dislike him so much, I don't think he thought about that for a second. I really thought he thought people were going to be great with it. And I find that behavior just fascinating, but also sad and insane, right? I thought everybody would celebrate me for this. They want me to be happy, right? And I want to talk about a couple of things in the podcast, but try not to break down everything. But it was just infuriating. First off, you know it's a good interview because by the end of the interview, Howie Mandel shaves Tom Sandoval's mustache off. Fascinating. Hard-hitting. Exactly the question I wanted to know. Tom, will you shave your mustache? Could you imagine Howie? Like, if you're a Bravo fan, you really are really wanting this interview. And then Howie spends 8 minutes taking his mustache. It's so dumb. I gotta say right off the bat, like, Howie Mandel, you can't fault Howie. Like, he's doing what he's doing. He's a legend in his own right. Like, he's made a living since what, like, in the early 80s through his comedy. I mean, he was on the show Saint Elsewhere, which he was great. His stand-up, his OCD, his germophobia, Deal or No Deal, America's Got Talent. I mean, the guy has made an amazing living as a host, comedian, all of those things. What I thought was incredibly disappointing and lazy was that he just didn't do the research. I mean, listen, I get the opportunity, the privilege to have people on all the time. Even our friend Lauren today, where you do a little bit of research. You try to think about the interview in a 360 sort of way. And that's something that I keep learning, month after month when you try to get better. But what a lazy interview in the sense that he was like, oh, I appreciate mental health. We're all just people. We all make mistakes. Great. You're right. And of course, he's got to be kind and nice to Tom, not only because I'm sure he's that way in real life, but Jason Bader, Tom's drummer, is affiliated with Howie because his wife is one of the, I believe, producers of his podcast. So that's where that connection was. But come on, Howie, you needed to put his feet to the fire a little bit. This is where Stern gets it right and so many people get it wrong. You know, you can relate to somebody and also say, you did something wrong, man. You really did. And Howie had his daughter on the show with him, who it sounded like was a Vanderpump Rules fan. But even she, I mean, like, you know, there were a couple times of like, yeah, I agree with Ariana. But it was like pushing of like, man, do you understand? Like, stop with me. Walk through this with me. Do you understand? You know, show me on the doll where you did wrong, Tom. Because I don't think he gets it at all. And it's so sad. And that kind of, I've walked away feeling sad for Tom more than angry. Because I was like, oh, this guy is going to be in a continual world of hurt for the next 6 months to a year because he doesn't really understand where the wrong part was. And believe me, there's so much wrong. So let me walk you through a couple of these things. By the way, the highlight was him shaving the mustache. But you would be like, God, there's so much to ask Tom. And Howie Howie was just like, I don't understand the hoopla. What's going on with the, I don't understand the big deal. We're all human. Okay, buddy. Like, literally, if I was Howie Mandel's wife, I would be scared shitless listening to this podcast. Be like, hey, Howie, what? You think everything's cool? Okay. Tom mentions that he still loves and cares for Ariana. He also talked, you know, he kind of gave us a timeline of how this all shook out. And that a year ago, he said he was 40 or nearing 40 and he wasn't happy with where he was, which, by the way, that's what, you know, that's when you see the big egos on these guys. Because if I was Tom Sandoval, I would have been thrilled about where I was because for most people in Los Angeles with the dreams that he had, that I had, you don't really get, even when I talk to Tom, that's like, you know, do you realize how lucky you are? Do you realize that most people don't get to have the career that Tom has had? And I attributed that to his passion, but also a lot of luck, a lot of luck. Right place, right time, working at the right bar, Lisa Vanderpump being a little thirsty and wanting some extra money besides Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and her restaurant career. And that built Vanderpump Rules. And so he said he was just, you know, feeling lost a little bit, which, by the way, there's three words that sum up all of this. It's midlife crisis. I think Tom thinks there is something super unique with what he is going through and not kind of pulling out and looking macro at everything and going, a lot of dudes go through exactly what he's going through. A lot of dudes feel lost. You get middle age and you're like, what, you know, wow, how do I transition? I mean, Kyle Cook is going to go through this potentially. And they get really lost, scared. I mean, I've been through that, of course. I mean, it happens. But then it's weird because then it seems like instead of trying to work on the relationship he had, he found something new with Raquel. And that inspired him and made him feel again. And by the way, this is kind of the plot of American Beauty with Kevin Spacey, if you ever saw that movie, except that it's set in Los Angeles and Tom and Ariana didn't have a daughter. They have a dog and a cat. So it is really bizarre, but he takes us through and even gives us that timeline. Like I told you, they hooked up after Guy's Night, and we get finally confirmation from Tom Sandoval's mouth once again. Sorry, Bravo. Tom has leaked everything, which I also thought was that at this point, is anybody doing thinking over there? Is it Jason, the drummer? Like, who's thinking for Tom? I feel like there's no thought going on unless the thought was, since everything is so intense still a month and a half in, maybe they were going to deflate by just giving all the information away. So we weren't ramped. So we had a little bit of time to adjust to it once we see the actual reunion. And I kept thinking, oh my God, they recorded this podcast Friday of this past week. That was 2 weeks after the reunion had been filmed. 2 weeks, and this is what he's learned in those 2 weeks, is what we heard on Howie Mandel's podcast. That does not bode well, because it does not seem like he's learned a lot yet at all. In fact, TMZ reported today, and I don't know who leaked this. Somebody said it was one of Tom's camp, and I was like, no, this makes him look even shittier. They had a photo of Tom and Raquel December 29th in St. Louis, where Tom is from, and it said his family did not want to meet with Raquel because they thought he was doing something wrong and not telling Ariana what was going on. And, you know, Tom Sandoval's parents, yes, he was doing something wrong. You are very right. But this dude has a picture posing in front of like a St. Louis landmark, and he's all like doing his pose that I've seen him do 5 billion times, like on top of the world. And it's like, dude, you are a sick fuck. You are a sick fuck. And I have a feeling that was leaked to try to like pull away from any sympathy Tom might have gotten from this Howie Mandel interview. But that's the part, is that he fully integrated Raquel into his life, this secret life that he was really proud of. And he took great lengths, even though he blames Ariana in the Howie Mandel interview, going, I was very open with it. I guess she just wasn't noticing. I was FaceTiming with Raquel all the time. I guess she just put blinders onto it. Well, you know what it is. You know women. Stupid, right? These women out there, I tell you, dumb as rocks. This guy was waving his dick in every different direction, and Ariana just didn't have the smarts to pick up on it. I tried to get cut multiple times. Okay, so he says that. There was also a part where Howie was like, well, you know, the daughter was like, well, did you throw Schwartz into this and made him kiss Raquel at Sheena's wedding to cover up for your thing? Because he admitted it happened at boys' night, so it had already taken place by the time they got to Sheena's wedding. And he goes, no, I was like, Raquel, the great girl, Schwartz, the go for it, you know? And I still find that so flimsy and so weirdly unbelievable. But you guys, it's sick, man. They hooked up in a car outside of Ariana's house when Ariana was home. He also says, I don't know if this was the same night, that they made out in the patio with the little fire pit I've told you guys about that they have in the backyard there. He spent like 30 minutes explaining what he did to this fire pit when I was there last January. And by the way, they have cameras out there. And I messaged with Logan, Ariana's best friend. He was like, yep, they sure do have cameras back there. So this was so brazen. Like, imagine Ariana sleeping upstairs and he's doing this. And remember, Boys Night was like, if we're to go by the show's timeline, was a couple days after she had to put Charlotte, her dog, down. I don't care if you are going through 5 billion midlife crises. Don't be disgusting, dude. And guess what? It's fun to kiss other people. It's exciting, right? Yeah, touching private parts, super fun, makes you feel alive. But come on, you built something 9 years, over 9 years, and this is the respect? He kept referring to them as, well, we were just a brand. We were a brand. And I, folks, you know, it's a very special moment when one brand meets another brand and, you know, they form another brand. But he kept talking about Ariana as the brand. Him and Ariana were a brand. We were a team, but we were mainly a brand. And that's fine if you want to talk about it that way, dude. If that's how you have now come to the conclusion that that's what you were. He's like, everybody called us mom and dad. They looked up to us. We took care of everybody. And they did in a lot of ways. But now I find that more self-serving than anything on Tom's part. So he kept referring to her as a brand. He kept saying, I still love Ariana. Yeah, you know, all of this shit. And like, he was talking about going to therapy. And he was going to therapy, it sounded like, just to be able to get the courage or the balls to break up with Ariana. And then he started doing couples counseling with Ariana, which usually couples counseling means there's a chance at working it out. Now, I want to share with you guys, I went to couples counseling with my ex when we were trying to work things out. And I remember there was just one thing where it was just like, I just realized it was one of the hardest. I remember sitting on a Saturday afternoon with this therapist, relationship therapist, a couples counselor, and just realizing that we had been through so many sessions. We had tried all of these things and just realizing I can't do this. It was one of the worst feelings I've ever had in my life. One of the worst feelings I've ever had in my life was sitting there. I will always remember sitting there. I'll always remember like the light coming out of the slatted shades on the wall, thinking it was like a Saturday and realizing what the hell do I do after this? And it was just painful. But I did go to those therapy sessions thinking that maybe there was a chance. You know, like I wasn't doing it to be like, see, you tell her that I don't want to ever be back here again. Like it was ridiculous. But it sounds like he was using that as some kind of escape plan because he had already decided that he wanted out of that relationship. So this therapist, and I'm curious if the therapist and the couples counselor were the same therapist. Usually they're not supposed to be. I had a separate therapist and a separate relationship therapist because, you know, that would just be polluting the thing if you're double dipping and this person was Tom's therapist and also a couples counselor because Tom's therapist knew that he was cheating with Raquel already. Which, by the way, Tom's therapist, we need to get her or him on season 11 pronto. So anyways, he was also asked, did you plan on breaking up with Ariana after the reunion? Did you have a plan? Because on Watch What Happens Live, Schwartz said to Andy that he had a plan for breaking up with her. And Sandoval was like, no, I wasn't going to do it after the reunion. I was going to do it in therapy. I was going to do it in the therapy session. And I was like, whoa, like I don't know if there's rules, but I was always kind of like, don't do that here. This isn't a place where you're supposed to break it off. This is a place where you're come to realize what your feelings are and be able to verbalize those feelings through language that your therapist helps you learn in a lot of ways. By the way, I don't even know. This is a super serious episode, you guys. Sorry. But I just thought that was so weird. And it just then kind of locked me into, oh, he was really trying to do the protection of this therapist. He also said that Ariana had, he would say, oh, yeah, one time I brought up the idea. What if we split up? What would you like, you know? Walk with me, will you? Let's do some make believe. What if we broke up? What would you do? And Ariana said, oh, I would quit the show. I wouldn't do the reunion. I would sell the house and I would move away. And then Tom was like, but you know, she hasn't done any of those things. No shit, dipshit. You handled this so badly and so poorly. And he's like, yeah, Ariana's really blowing up right now. And I'm so happy for her. Dude, I've psychologically messed with her for potentially the rest of her life with any partner she ever has, but I'm very excited. She's getting a lot of positive buzz right now. Really frustrating shit to hear. Really frustrating. And I can't imagine if Ariana listened to this or heard clips, and I'm sure she has. What? I mean, it's just, dude, just sit, man. Sit for a couple months and really think about what you did. Think about what made you do this. And he's like, you know, it's two separate things, the breakup and the affair. Those are two separate things. And I'm like, no, they aren't, dipshit. Like, Howie, where are you, bro? It's not. Like, I know he's wanting to make the relationship a separate thing so he can tell Raquel, like, this is something special. But it's the same thing. He got busted. That caused the breakup, blah, blah, blah. There were just so many stupid little moments that I'll go over with you on a separate episode. I'll probably make that part one on Friday and part two the recap, because I want to go through it. I want to play clips of it. I want you guys to feel what I felt was just insane rage, but also sadness. I think this guy will not understand for a very long time what he did. And I think he's so used to being looked at as a good guy that I think he's potentially focused on the fact that all of a sudden he's not. Also, Howie, how dare you make fun of the TMZ interviewer? He was like, this guy, this guy out there asking you, and you clearly explained to him, hindsight is 20/20 and he doesn't get it. Which is Josh, my favorite TMZ interviewer. He's like, okay, Tom, okay. Okay, so like, are you saying hindsight is 20? Which, Howie, when you're doing like a really feeble interview, you really don't have a lot of right to like make fun of another interviewer, even if it is Josh from TMZ. Like, you just kind of have lost the right. But like, listen, Howie got that interview. Howie is friends with those people, and he can't be a dick. He can't be. But it would have been refreshing and probably a little helpful for Tom in the long run if he had been held to his feet to the fire a little bit, right? I'm trying to think. There's so many things that I want to talk about with this interview, and that's why it's going to be a separate one, because I want to get into this interview, which talks all about behavior. And I think behavior is what we should be looking at, what we should be studying. And I think in this interview, there's a lot of laughs, but I learned a lot. I thought Lauren was just amazing. I'm going to put her information for her website up there. If you're interested, I mean, I was interested. I'm interested. I was like, man, I want to actually use your services. I need to understand myself so I don't become a Tom Sandoval and start a band at some point. And decide to do another mustache. Also, you guys, they announced today, BravoCon 2023, we predicted it here, will be in Las Vegas, November 3rd, 4th, and 5th at Caesar's Palace. So, tickets have not gone on sale yet, but you can make hotel reservations. Caesar's Palace, of course, very expensive to stay there, but I will tell you, I looked at other prices around there. The Mirage, which is right next door, I think had $200 a night rooms. So get on that if you want to go. So Bad It's Good will be there, and I cannot wait to party with everybody. I'm going to party my balls off. I hope Tom Sandoval and the Most Extras are not playing. Sorry, Tom. Let's sit 23 out, and we'll revisit in 2026. But I'm sure we'll get a DJ James Kennedy set like, hello, you fat fucks at BravoCon, let's go. Also, today, Wednesday, we get a new episode of Vanderpump Rules. My God, I want a bye week. I want a week where they just take off and go, hey, we realize this has been an intense time for Bravo fans. We're going to sit this one out and we're just going to air Chrisley Knows Best. We're just going to air Chrisley Knows Best. And that's, just enjoy the week. Hold your loved ones close. Don't worry. I know there's so much more to talk about with Tom. We will get to that on Friday's episode as I try to ponder more of the ridiculousness. I will say that I did reach out to Ariana and we shared some exchanges because I had a couple of suggestions I had mentioned on yesterday's show that I wanted, and I did, but I will say this, what I like about Ariana and what I always find to be true, not just now, is that she does have a good head on her shoulders. And also Tom brought up multiple times her mental health and his own mental health. He was depressed, but Ariana, she'll do things like she'll just lay in bed all day and that's how she processes things. But I was like, Tom, what is your thing? Like, you all and just do a full-blown relationship? That's how I process depression. I just start full relationships behind my partner's back. So he talks about her mental, but I will say, even in talking to Ariana, she's got a good head on her shoulders, and I'm really excited for what is to come because I think she is doing everything right. And I don't mean that in that she's being strategic, but I think she understands, don't do things like, I'll go on Howie Mandel. Like, don't do things like that. And I think I'm very excited to see what is to come. And I think there will be a couple of things that are very exciting, and we'll be covering all of that on So Bad It's Good. Okay, let's just get into this. Because it's time. And also, it's Tuesday, April 11th here in Arizona. And my birthday is April 25th. Don't worry, you don't have to get me anything unless it's nice. No. Seeing that we got various health things happening right now, we're going to celebrate my birthday with my family tonight. And we're going to do that tonight. And so I'm looking forward to spending some time and seeing my niece and nephew and all of that stuff. And I hope you guys are having a good week. How are you? I'm so rude. I didn't even ask you that at the beginning of the show like I usually do. But I hope you're having a good, and by the way, it's hot as balls here in Arizona. It's like 100 degrees here already. Like, it was nice and cool when I got here a week and a half ago, and now it's like hot as balls. It's a perfect segue into our guest. No. If you guys like this show, and I hope you do, please leave it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Remember, we're on YouTube as well. That's a newer thing. Go subscribe over there. Go watch all the videos. It's a lot of fun. Meditza and I are having a lot of fun putting those videos up. Her graphics are killing it over there. And I will talk to you on Thursday, I believe, and then a double episode on Friday. But here is our guest. Our mutual friend Mindy put us in touch, and I'm so glad she did. I think she is truly, truly amazing. And I always really geek out on people that can put a language to things that I don't have. They can say, these are my feelings. Like, what is the language? Like, explain behavior to me. Or what is your experience with behavior? And I thought this was a really interesting discussion that kind of is a little left of center of how we use, you know, like I say, I always shoot from the hip. I'm angry a lot of the times in regards to Scandoval. And I thought this was just a really interesting conversation. I'm so excited to hear what you guys say, think about it as well. So, okay. I will talk to you on Thursday. Here she is, Lauren Clayton. Good. Today, I am so thrilled to have our next guest. My friend, Mindy, recommended her and said, hey, you should talk to my friend, because I think I had mentioned on a podcast about wanting to go a little bit deeper in some of the behavior that we're seeing, especially with Scandoval and Vanderpump Rules. Now, you can, you know, behavior is such an interesting topic because, especially in reality shows, is that these are such elevated personalities, but at the same time, they have this kernel of truth that we kind of recognize because we see some of this behavior, hopefully not all of this behavior, in ourselves. But I wanted to try to put a little more language around that and a little more thought around that. So we have our guest today, who is an ex-forensic therapist, where she did personality profiling and took assessments for ex-cons recently released from federal prison. Like, that's already blowing my mind. Her interest is in neuroscience, neuroplasticity, and epigenetics, which led her to establishing her private practice in 2010, where she coaches executives and celebrities as an executive leadership coach and integrative health coach. I literally already need to hire her myself. But her passion is helping her clients upgrade and optimize their psychological, emotional, and physical health, as well as improve and thrive in their relationships and career, which I think Tom Sandoval needs now more than ever. But I just wanted to welcome to the show, Lauren Clayton. Lauren, thank you so much for being here.
Ryan, thank you so much for having me.
I want you on a reality show now. Like, this is, I mean, that is, I mean, the history that goes into that. I mean, I'm going to jump into all of this. I made her watch Vanderpump Rules this season, even though she's like you're a Housewives fan yourself, right? You've watched Housewives for a long time.
I took a sabbatical. I did start watching Housewives of Beverly Hills again, and I know I like Vanderpump Rules, so it was great to catch up.
Well, I mean, but coming from your background, when you watch something like this, are you able to even enjoy the show, or do you look at it with this clinical eye of like, whoa, the behavior that's being exhibited is out of control?
Both. Both. I mean, it's not that it's out of control. I'm just like, they're on their journey, and there's a lot of different things going on. And before I get all into that, I'm going to use the personality disorders and profiling kind of framework, But in no way, this is for entertainment purposes only. In no way am I diagnosing anyone or anything like
that's
that.
Something, that is something I've learned in the last month is that I cannot diagnose anybody. If I say Tom Sandoval is a narcissist, that's not meaning I'm diagnosing him. It's just a pattern of behavior for me reading the internet, which is not the place to diagnose anybody. I can't, you know, and you are a professional and you still can't diagnose somebody. So that is something that I want to, that's such an important thing. Thank you for thinking of that up top. I guess let's start with you a little bit before we get into the Vanderpump of it all. Tell us how you even came into this career. Like, I mean, how do you even study for this? How do you even know you're interested in this? What is your background?
Yeah, it kind of found me. I thought I wanted to be a family therapist, and the forensic psychology was one of my last internships, and it was just a really good internship, and I thought it would look good on my resume, and I just really ended up enjoying these people. Especially, I worked with people that were convicted for drug-related offenses. So, I mean, a lot of them came out of prison. They're like, Miss Lauren, I'm just an entrepreneur. If you could show me how to sell something legally and make money, you know, I'm down. And so I really enjoy, it was just a very good experience and helped me so much. But I just, and this kind of goes along with the personality disorders thing that we're talking about. I'm not a super big fan of traditional therapy. I don't think it's good. I think like the DSM is great framework for like the all the personality disorders to conceptualize things, especially if you're a victim of narcissistic abuse, like understanding where it comes from. But pigeonholing people and coming from a place of you're this and you're this illness, it's not, I don't think it's the best opportunity for growth, which is why I started my coaching practice. I wanted a more integrative, holistic approach.
Which you actually, that's more of the neuroscience, neuroplasticity, mm-hmm. all of that stuff, which is, I mean, how do you recognize that you're good at something like this? How do you reckon, like, how does something like this actually is, I think I have a calling for this. Does what you do now, does it feel like a calling?
Oh, it absolutely feels like a calling. And all I know is that I love the transformation process. I love when people, especially when people are kind of at their rock bottom moment and they're like, this needs to change. I work with imposter syndrome.
Lauren, I'm here. I'm right here right now. This is my rock bottom moment. This is, let's use me. We can diagnose me. I mean, but you, I mean, sorry, you talk about imposter syndrome, which already I was like, that's me. Yes.
Oh, well, good. I'll talk about that more. I just released a program for imposter syndrome, but I really think it's a spiritual journey because it's kind of like, okay, here's my gifts, skills, talents, and abilities, but all this, whatever is holding me back, we all have that. And watching people move through that and transform and be able to optimize their life, live their highest and best, whatever that means for them, I love that process. So yes, I do feel like it's like my calling.
I always think about people repeating patterns in their lives. Like we all do it in a small scale. And we also do it in a much larger scale in terms of relationships and things like that. And in fact, you could even say Tom Sandoval is doing a little bit of this right now. But is there, you know, I've read so many different things about, you know, minuscule change can happen, but a person can't really change in the course of their lives because they're going to keep going back and hitting the same note. Do you disagree with that?
I do. I mean, I think it's about your willingness, right? The only person that can change somebody is you. So if you have the willingness, yes, you'll change. And does that process suck at times? Yes, it very much sucks. And it's very easy to just go back into your old comfortable behavior patterns where you kind of got what you wanted out of it. But Of course, I feel like people can change if they want to, and if they have the willingness, and if they're willing to do the hard work. And that's why it takes rock bottom moments sometimes where it's like everything has to shatter, everything has to fall apart. You have to get humiliated on a reality TV show, whatever, like things like that have to happen.
Yeah, by the way, that's really what we're potentially dealing with here. But so much of it involves the ego. And especially when you're on a reality television show, a lot of these people, their egos are in hyperdrive. Like they are at such a, I don't want to say a godlike power, but like celebrity culture and things like that kind of, you know, we're all talking about them. That's a very powerful thing, mm-hmm. but you have to almost break an ego to like start over and try to rebuild. I mean, with Tom Sandoval, what we're going through right now, I guess this, you know, when you started this season from the beginning, I mean, and watching up to now, what were your overall vibes? As somebody that was like, yeah, I'm hearing crazy things, but to go see some of this yourself and then read what is going on with the Scandoval, because as we all know now, we've talked about every day on this show, Sandoval was cheating on Ariana with Raquel for 8 months, and they are still together. He got busted. It wasn't like he came clean. He got caught, and this has all just exploded, and it's been a month now of this. What was your overall view, though, then watching the show? Because none of this is in the show yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, yeah. Tough stuff. Well, tough
it's
stuff.
Really, it's really
tough stuff.
it's really interesting. And what, I mean, we all have this voyeuristic side to us, right?
Yes.
Reality TV shows would not be popular if it wasn't. And just to give a little psychological background on that, we like that, and our pleasure zones kind of fire up, like when we watch these shows, because you've been cheated on, or you've been the cheater, and you've been close enough to that situation and experienced all the things. But when you're watching someone else do it, you can see it all happen without the stressful negative consequences. So there's something very addictive about that. Like the dopamine's going, and it's like, okay, I can be involved in this. And also we see ourselves in these people. And then, you know, if we've gone through that or we're currently going through something like that, there is some type of like pair bonding that goes on with I'm feeling your pain. So, and there's like an oxytocin, there's a connection, like a chemical bond that gets released. I always like prefacing it with that, because it's kind of like, yeah, of course, this is why we like watching this stuff.
But, no, it really is interesting to watch it from this perspective, because like you said, you know, potentially you've been cheated on, or you've been the cheater, and these are things that we can all recognize. I think there's a shock level to it after you've been 10 seasons with these people and they're still making these horrific mistakes, because then that goes to your point of, there's not a lot of change happening. A lot of these characters on Vanderpump Rules in particular, and reality shows, will always kind of go to the tried and true statement of, I'm a work in progress. But it never seems like they're working on themselves, and they're never progressing on themselves. But this was wild, because with Tom Sandoval, he was somebody that I think we all kind of believed in, that he wasn't one of the dog guys. He was, you know, he wanted his little weird side projects with his band, but he truly was in love with this girl from what we saw on television.
But see, I think that was a red flag, especially how they showed it this season. Like, all this stuff's going on, you're stressed out, and opening a restaurant, I used to be a waitress and a host, so I know that it's stressful. So if you got a moment to yourself, why wouldn't you spend it with your partner instead of, oh, I need to have my creative outlet? Like, go fucking paint something with your girl. Like, why are you going off and abandoning your business partner and your girlfriend to go start a band when everything else is going on? There's a lack of responsibility for other relationships. It's like, I'm stressed out, I'm going to start a band and kind of like abandon this, and then I'm going to come back and it's all about my needs. And so a lot of,
ooh, I like that. You're right. That is, there's a very much my needs to it. You're exactly right. Yeah.
And there's just kind of like my needs, this is the hierarchy, and then everything else is kind of secondary. But the bar, it's like, okay, how is that going to help me? And then with the Ariana and the whole scandal, it's kind of like, well, what ego strokes were, you know, getting met from that situation? And
or the ego strokes not getting met that would actually create you doing something potentially with another woman.
Absolutely. And I do think so. There is some, and again, this is just framework to understand things. There is some narcissistic and like sociopathic tendencies within that Sandoval situation, because, and by narcissistic, I mean just focused on yourself, or what could also be called like antisocial behavior, like the deceitfulness and the just like the compulsive lying. I'm going to actually pull it up, because it's like to not, so people are like,
you know, like just paraphrase.
Disregard for other people's needs, like the manipulation, just like what we would like an overarching like shadiness, you know, to not use a clinical term, is like some of the antisocial behavior that Sandoval is exhibiting in this situation. And with Raquel, so Raquel gets out of a relationship with
DJ James Kennedy.
It's Kennedy, who also has narcissistic tendencies and
yeah, he does.
Alcoholism, right? And alcoholism can mirror a lot of narcissistic tendencies. And so you have this dynamic. So you're someone that's drawn to that. So who is drawn to that? Borderline personality disorders, they kind of pair well together. And then people that have codependent tendencies, where they kind of like abandon their life for the narcissist or the alcoholic. And remember when Raquel and Ariana and Katie, I think it was, they were having like girls, like,
yeah,
whatever.
And she was like, I didn't think you had it in you, Raquel. Yes.
And then Raquel goes, I don't even know who I am anymore. Yeah, because when you get out of a relationship like that, you've abandoned your needs so much that you really don't know who you are, because it's been all about the alcoholic or the narcissist, and like amalgamated, mixed with the fact that Raquel has some borderline tendencies, like black and white, like I'm going to be seductive, and like I'm going to, so it's kind of like I'm in pain, I'm hurting, so I'm going to not care about what's going on with it or who I'm going to hurt to get my like ego needs met, because this, I mean, that seemed like a really traumatic breakup.
Did seem like a traumatic breakup, which I still don't fully know the ins and outs. And I think we're finding as we keep going. And it's, you know, because it's interesting, too, I always say, with all these other characters now in retrospect, taking this moral high ground, when they all each have their individual big issues that they are now ignoring so they can put all their hate on Sandoval and Raquel, which is interesting. But yeah, Raquel, we see as a very lost person. And dealing with DJ James Kennedy and other situations of her past. But then in going to Tom Sandoval, who is another, you know, like I said, we're not diagnosing, but has narcissistic tendencies. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that just be falling in the same pattern, but with a more positive person?
I was just talking to my friend who's getting married in October, and there is so much to plan. You got to do the food. You got to do the food tasting. You got to book the venue, talk about the DJ. And then not to mention all of the emotion that goes into this. And then all the while you're like, ooh, what would I do if I had a wedding? I've been a part of a lot of weddings over the years, and it's an incredibly stressful process. You go from this newly engaged bliss to overwhelmed by invitation paper and flower colors in the blink of an eye. So using Zola helps with wedding planning from start to finish, and it makes every decision easier so you can stay in your bliss. With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste that delicious cake. Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually enjoyable. There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or on your couch. Zola helps couples plan the wedding they really want, with tons of unique features and personalized recommendations based on a couple's preferences. Every Zola wedding is as unique as the couple planning it. They've thought of everything you'll need and have built every tool to get you to I do, including customized checklists to get you moving, keep you on track, and prepare you for what's next. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So, the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Like he exhibits narcissism in a positive way, I think Sandoval does, because he's not like, you know, chewing people's head off, calling everybody fat like DJ James Kennedy does.
Okay,
you
I know, see like, what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? Like, is it just swapping one for the other?
No. So there are different types of narcissism, but the two main types are like the overt narcissism, as it's called, what you think of like the ego driven, I mean all the time. And then there's the covert narcissism, which you see a lot of in that show, especially with Sandoval, where it's kind of like, everyone likes me. I'm just, you know, and they, covert narcissists come off like that. Like they have a lot of good, but they're all like superficial relationships. And beneath that, there's a lot of shadiness and there's a lot of like, you know, I will fuck you over. Like, you're my friend, but I'll fuck you over.
But does that person recognize it? Does that narcissist recognize their own behavior of like, I'll fuck anybody over? These are all superficial relationships on top. Do they recognize?
That's more on the sociopathic side. They'll be like, yeah, and I'll do that. Like they're owning it. And like, cause the empathy is so low. And a lot of theories are that they don't have any empathy, but with the covert narcissist, there is afterwards, there's a little bit of empathy and like there's a lot of debate as to whether like that's genuine or not. But in the moment, there's this compulsive like reactivity to it mixed with a lot of alcohol. I mean, every character defect is like exploded and like
that's
on
another
a level
character
10.
On the show. Yeah, it's another character.
Seriously,
yeah.
It's like everything with like the alcohol. I mean, that is a character. It's just it makes everything worse. So these impulsive decisions, when you already have some of these maybe character opportunities for growth, like character defects or whatever, like we all do. We all have those. I have them. Everyone has them. So, but with this set of character defects, like they just really get heightened and triggered when alcohol is involved. And so you're just impulsive. You're not thinking about if you're ready, like if your baseline is to not think about anyone else and you get some alcohol in you, you're really not thinking about anyone else.
Well, I also thought you said opportunities for growth. And I just thought, wouldn't that be great if like a season of reality television, they were promoting it like this season, you're going to see a lot of opportunities for growth. Like we don't want that. We want this. Well, we say we want all of this, but then we're experiencing it with Sandoval. Such at a level where it's so intense and so brutal. And it kind of, and I know this sounds, listen, I'm treating this very seriously, you guys. And usually I do a comedy podcast, but there is something very dark in this where it makes you kind of face your own behavior and really start to question how you treat people and how you treat people in your life and really what you're trying to get out of things. And I think reality shows at their best can kind of be a light lesson. I don't think you can truly, you shouldn't be taking any kind of social cues from these people, but you might get some warning signs on how to potentially stop some of your behavior. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree with that. And that's again, to my point, or like we were talking about how we see ourselves in these people and or their situations, especially the pain points where we've been victimized, it's easier to see. And there's a thing called the shadow, which doctor, I have him in the back, Freud and Jung, he's on that side. But
I had Freud on the pod last week. I know who he is. Yeah,
I'm joking. No, but the shadow side is that when we get triggered or we're like repulsed by something or we're angry, like, oh, Sandoval cheated. Like when you have those big reactions, like the word trigger is very popular right now. So when you're triggered by something, the idea of the shadow is that unconsciously or maybe subconsciously, there's something in you that could cheat or fuck someone over.
Yes.
Or
that's
right.
It.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like that shadow. So anytime you're getting triggered by watching TV or anything, if that's like a true trigger for you and you're getting upset, there is some shadow work to do there. It's like, well, what in me would do that or that I can't? And a lot of times it's so unconscious that there's like, there's no way I'm just mad at that because that happened to me. Da, da, da. But if you've truly made peace with it and integrated that experience, you just don't get triggered by it. So that is something.
I love that. I was going back to your comments about sociopaths in some way about lack of empathy. And I think as a human being, one of the greatest strengths we have, I mean, I guess you could consider it a weakness too, but is the caring about other people. I mean, like, listen, we even care about these reality TV stars. That's why we're talking about them all the time. That's why you're listening to this right now is, you know, as humans, isn't that how do you teach somebody to care? How does somebody literally have zero empathy? And what does a human go through, in your opinion, where they start to not care about these people that they profess love to and are in long-term relationships with? What is the potential thought process that goes into, I mean, whether it be a shadow life, whether it be, I mean, but just this intense hurt that they're going to cause? Do they just block that out completely and just go towards carnal pleasure? Or like, what is the thought process for some of these things that are horrible?
Yeah. So there's a lot of unintegrated shadow work there. And sociopath, any of the personality disorders, so narcissism, borderline, histrionic, antisocial, and sociopath, like it's called cluster B of, and you look it up, it's actually super interesting. But all of that is, those are trauma responses. So you're not born a narcissist or any of these things. And we, you know, it's a sliding scale. We all have a little bit of like, they're just ways, they're defense structures, right? And when it's a really intense personality disorder, it's because you're so highly defended. And it's just like all of this unhealed things that you haven't worked on that are just based on previous trauma. And trauma is subjective. A lot of people that are like, I grew up so great and da da da. Well, then why are all your relationships fucked up and like you're cheating? You know what I mean? Maybe it wasn't. Yeah, maybe there's some things that it's okay that your parents weren't perfect or whatever. So it's just unintegrated and unhealed trauma that, I mean, sometimes some of this stuff happens to us when we're pre-verbal and we're, you know, our parents were fighting and as like babies and, you know, we absorb a lot from the time that we're born, which is, you know, kind of intense to think about, but by the time we're born to when we're like 6 years old, we're sponges and absorbing a lot. So if your parents or you're around certain things, or you just got, you know, the neural pathways. This is why I love neuroplasticity and neuroscience. Is like these neural pathways.
Sorry to be ignorant, but what is neuroplasticity? I was reading that. I was like, what the heck is neuroplasticity?
I'll tell you right now. So like, you know, you get like whatever, like let's say the thing is that relationships are chaotic. So you grow up thinking relationships are consciously or unconsciously. And then so you have a bunch of chaotic relationships. The neuroplasticity piece is you've been firing and wiring a certain way. Relationships are chaotic. I'm seeking them. I'm attracting them. Even unconsciously, I'm attracting them. But you can break that pattern. It's like software that you can choose to actually uninstall anytime and then download better software. I say this to my clients all the time. I'm like, okay, you're running on Windows 93. Like maybe back in the day in 93, like that, like running your relationships work that way, but you seem to be suffering a lot right now. So you want to like, let's uninstall that program. It's just a program. We could rewire that situation, which takes a lot of, I mean, it takes.
Well, Lauren, doesn't that, but it just seems like, I mean, I know what you're, the idea you're talking about, but that feels when you're rewiring, that's got to feel so foreign and wrong. You know, because we're so used to saying the same negative thing to ourselves again and again and again, that when you start to, I mean, you know, this thing has decades sometimes on you and you start rewiring that, it's going to feel like you're like all of a sudden like two left feet. You can't move. It feels gross. It feels wrong because you want that hit of dopamine that it's going to give you from the negative little thing that you've been doing for the last 20 years.
Absolutely. And by the way, you could get a better and higher hit of dopamine from new patterns. So it's not like you have to leave that behind. But yeah, program disruption, like you, I'm like, this is major, major pattern disruption right now. And it's going to be messy and it's going to be awkward and it's going to feel uncomfortable and you're not going to want to do it. And it's going to suck for, I always say that it's going to suck for a while, but how would you rather it suck for this long and then have a lifetime of better relationships or better health or whatever? Yeah, that's typically a good trade. Most people are willing to do that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. If Tom Sandoval, and by the way, so, you know, he's gone from one relationship to the next. And a lot of these relationships don't, I mean, they have like, you know, now it's like he's been in this one for like 8 months while he was in this other one for 9 years at the same time. And now he's continuing on with the other one and the other one is left behind. And he did that before with Kristen Doty as well, who was another cast member on this show. If he came to you and said, listen, Lauren, I need your help. What do I do? How do I fix this? How would you work with somebody like Tom Sandoval? Well, by the way, or you at a point where you talk to people and you're like, I don't think I can work with you. Like, I mean, how does it work?
Okay. Well, to answer your first question, I would dig in and first say, what is so scary about being alone? And from my perspective, I know because the defense structure, there's a lot of narcissism and some sociopathic, like from what I can see, right? There's a lot of, so like narcissistic personalities and defense structure, they cannot be alone. They're starting the next relationship while they're in another one. And they always have like, what's it called in baseball where there's people like,
listen, I'm not into sports. I'm like, yeah, baseball. It's
on deck.
It's called stoppity slip. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they always have lots of, you know,
a deep bench. Yeah.
A deep bench because it's called a narcissistic annihilation or just ego forms of anxiety or ego where they cannot be alone. It's too much. It's too anxiety provoking for that defense structure. And like, that's actually sometimes the best time for if a narcissist, like they have enough to like realize like, oh, you know what? I do this. They can be like, I need to be alone for a second to figure this out, but it's really painful for them. So that's on like sitting from my side of the chair, I can see that's what's going on. But when I'm working with people like that, I'm like, what is so scary about being alone, about truly being alone, not entertaining anything else.
Is it the thoughts inside your head when you're alone? Like, what is that fear for most people?
For that defense structure, it's abandonment. And we all have abandonment and like what's called anxious attachment, where it's kind of like, where are you? Why aren't you texting me five like times an hour? Or, you know what I mean? We have that like,
do you not love me? Yeah.
Yeah. You don't love me. I haven't heard from you 10 times today. It's like that anxious, like I cannot stand when you're not around, like because you might leave me. And so instead of healing that, their option or what they choose to do is like have another one. Just like, you know, like you prepare for an earthquake or something. Like I need this all stocked. I need my like supply stocked. So in case someone abandons me or something happens, I have another one. And it's like this constant void. If you're around people like this, it's like this void of like never ending. Like you can never do, I feel like I need to prove myself, or I feel like I need to like be around them all the time or something. You'll feel it within yourself from a person that's like that. And you start acting differently. And then you kind of want to like abandon yourself. Because it's like, well, they'll find someone else. It's like people can feel it in their gut on this other, you know, on like a very like physical level, visceral level. Yeah.
So then for somebody like, I mean, is some of these people like their egos are so big that they couldn't even really work on themselves because you can't convince them that they've done anything wrong? Because a lot of the thing, what I'm hearing too, in terms of Sandoval and stuff like that, is he's still not really getting, you know, there's not a lot of like, he potentially is not putting a lot of blame on himself for a lot of this stuff, even though, you know, to us, this is clearly black and white, but I think to him, there's a lot of gray. And I always talk about the idea that we don't really go through our lives thinking of ourselves as villains. We're the heroes of our own lives. So he has, of course, reasons in his head that he has rationalized all this behavior for. Do you have to know that your behavior is wrong to be able to work on something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There has to be a willingness. And for people with that defense structure, I'll call it, it takes a lot, because even if they burn every bridge, they'll go find the next like kind of codependent personality or someone to attend, rather than be like, hey, I really disrupted or ruined this relationship. It's just too much to take responsibility. So that's what I was saying. Like the willingness has to be there, but if it's not, then it's a hard no. Then it's like, okay, well,
yeah, there's nothing to be done. We were also talking about the potential idea of him. I mean, he didn't purposely get caught, but he was being very lazy in protecting the secret towards the end, supposedly, where he was almost doing this stuff to get caught because he couldn't face an actual real life conversation with somebody that he was in a relationship for 9 years with. He couldn't be honest with this other person. So the other thought is, okay, I'm just going to get caught and force her hand in mm-hmm. doing this. And a lot of guys, I've heard a lot of my female friends talk about that, you know, this idea of, you know, they can't do this. So they'll make the partner do it because, you know, they don't have the balls to do that. We see that with Tom Schwartz in Vanderpump Rules, who is his partner, is that he seems very not just lazy, but also there's a fear of hurting people's feelings, of saying what he needs. And he would rather just be the aw shucks good guy and not really get his feet dirty.
Absolutely. So the
hands
first
dirty,
thing you're
not feet, sorry.
All of it, feet, right?
Like hands all dirty.
So the first conflict avoidance is a big thing. You know, when there's all these opportunities for growth and you don't have a healthy way for conflict resolution, that happens. I mean, you could even see it with Schwartz and Katie. Like Katie she can't tolerate anyone else's experience at all. So then Schwartz kind of cowers into nice guy mode and like, you know what I mean? That whole thing of their dynamic. But to answer your question, it's kind of like, okay, well, that's just another form of not taking responsibility. Like I'm going to do this thing and kind of like accidentally get caught because then I can just say it without saying it. But I mean, think about that. You can't even go to your partner of 9 years and explain this, or, you know, like, that's another huge red flag in terms of opportunities for growth, or maybe being on the spectrum of a personality disorder. Primarily narcissism and some sociopathic antisocial stuff, because it's a form of not taking responsibility to be conflict avoidant.
Yeah. No, I mean, and forcing this hand, there's been such a wave of anger for this. If any of like, I mean, how, when you have an extreme personality or an extreme ego and all that, can you speculate of what somebody would feel when they're getting all of this heat on them all of a sudden, or all of this hatred, or, you know, Raquel's also getting this as well. And I'm not saying it's not deserved in some cases, but there's such a wave of it. In a way, does this embolden a narcissist of like, look at what I created. Of course I'm going to cause this much of a tornado because I'm me, I'm huge.
So you see that more in borderline personality disorders.
Is a borderline personality? What is the definition of borderline?
Thank you. Good question. So the term came from, there's a spectrum from like anxiety disorder all the way, and then narcissism is a little bit more intense. And then they found this thing like right before like psychotic, like when you're actually like in psychosis, there's this other thing that kind of looks like narcissism sometimes, but it's on the borderline of psychosis and narcissism. And because borderline people can go off, they can go off into a rage, they can just get like we were talking about offline, like Lala, you know, when she was just like this black and white mode. Borderline people think in black and white terms. So she's like, you're either with me, like telling Schwartz, like it's black or white. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not a healthy way to think in black and white terms. But so when they think in black and white terms, and if you don't agree with them, they can go into that psychotic kind of rage mode. And so that's where the term came from, because they're kind of on the borderline of that. But okay. it's just another personality, and they're histrionic. Like they're if you have ever been in a relationship with a borderline, sometimes it's so exciting and they're so like charismatic and seductive, passionate, and all of these things. And it's like you hear it described as like the best and worst relationship I ever had. And then they're just a nightmare at the same time. So it's like you never know, and you feel like you're walking on eggshells. There's a book called Walking on Eggshells about dealing with personality or borderline personality disorder. So, and I was bringing that up because.
Talking about in terms of like Sandoval, the idea of like, I created this, look at it. Like, of course everybody's talking about me,
yeah.
You know, cause I'm such a big star.
I feel like Schwartz wants it to go away. I think I could see more of that. Yeah. I see more of that in Raquel. Like, look at this fire I created behind me. Like,
you really see that, even though all that we see on the show is this kind of not a perpetual victim, but you know, if this hadn't have come out, we always say this would have been an underdog story where you would have rooted for her potentially, but you're saying that you sometimes see a little bit more, well, because she's finally learning to stand up for herself. She's out of this relationship. She's saying, I don't know who I am. I don't know. You know, like it's that thought of like, you're lost in your 20s and you're trying to find your way. And there's some underdog qualities to that, because Lala is yelling at her all the time. And Lala looks like, geez, Lala, calm down. She's like, and you don't think of Raquel as a true threat, or at least I don't when I used to view her, but you're saying, what do you see?
I see. I mean, it feels like Kaiser Soze to me. Like, really? You're going to actually remember? I'm just kind of like, no, I got your number. And you wouldn't even entertain the Schwartz idea and like Sheena has like some histrionic stuff going on, the pot stirring, and I'm gonna create drama, fine, but you have a brain of your own, and if you're so smart, she, you know, like Lala would make fun of her being dumb, and it's like, no, I'm smart. Well, if you're smart, then act like it. Then don't turn around and say like Sheena's brainwashing me. No. Well, I'm not.
That's
even
the other thing too, is that you have choices in this world, and even if Tom Sandoval is manipulating Raquel or Svengali-ing her in any way, she still has a choice on whether to participate in this behavior, participate in this illicit affair, because, you know, just to point out again, Ariana and her were friends. It wasn't like the three of them were all friends together. They were, but like Ariana and her would hang out like during all of this stuff going on. And that is a choice, you know, because even if that relationship was happening, you would think then potentially Raquel would pull away from Ariana and say, it's too much. It's too hurtful for me, I can't deal with that. But she kept being around her.
Exactly. So that's why I'm saying I don't see the underdog thing. I see a lot of like, you know, we could go to the hurt people thing. Fine. But like, you know what I mean? I mean, this is kind of like a classic example of that, but it's also like resolve your trauma. And I'm not saying that that's easy or fun to do, but then it ends up, you end up like looking like a total asshole and doing things that are just, you're just surviving and getting by like on all of your character defects that, you know, got you all the pain points and all the, yeah, the pain points that you're upset about, like with your James, like her last relationship, they just get exacerbated if you don't work on
that. We'll be back to that in just 1 second. Now is my favorite time of the episode where I get to talk about our sponsor. And this week, our show, So Bad Is Good, is sponsored by our friends over at BetterHelp. Now, believe me, BetterHelp, I think the entire cast of Vanderpump Rules needs BetterHelp immediately ASAP. But all joking aside, I know you guys know that I'm a big proponent of mental health, of just making really small steps that can lead into lifelong betterment of some sort. They want me to talk about in this ad, they usually tell you kind of directions to go. And this, they asked me a question of, talk about a time that I've learned something new about myself. And what was that experience like for me and how did it change my life? Now, I will tell you that I did see a therapist right before the pandemic. I was talking to a therapist. It was post-divorce. And I have a real hard time with confidence, which is insane. And a lot of people don't actually sometimes believe that, but I do. And through therapy, it was this wild thing where this amazing lady kind of started to try to get me to understand that these negative thought patterns that I have built up over decades could potentially be not true, that my own mind could be lying to myself, right? I mean, that is like the end of the sixth sense when he realizes he hasn't been alive the whole time. You're like, what? Wait, what? You're saying that I could potentially be like, that my mind is potentially against me sometimes? And it blew me away. But it also changed my life in a lot of ways. And it also led me to do this show. Honestly, it gave me the confidence to do this show. But in that, you also have to be very honest in talking about mental health, is that it's a daily struggle. You have to go out and do the things that are going to give you the best shot of happiness, or not even happiness, of just getting through life, which can be so difficult, right? And that, like I said, includes working out for me, taking vitamins, talking to a therapist. There are so many things that go into that. And you have to do that day after day, week after week. But getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially because we're always growing and changing. I change week to week, unfortunately, not just my wayside. Hey-o, dad joke. But you know what I'm saying? We really do. You have to keep on top of those changes. And that's where therapy really comes in. It's all about deepening your self-awareness and understanding, because sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react the way we do until we talk through things. I mean, that's the other thing, is that I can have a billion thoughts going on in my mind at one time. And I can think, oh, all of these things about all of these thoughts going on. But until I speak it out loud to somebody else, do I realize that a good 83% of those things are completely nonsense? It helps you hone in on the things that actually matter. Now, BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. I have fully benefited from therapy. Period. And I expect to benefit from it my entire life. But it is like the gym. You're going to not want to go. You're going to not want to do this. That's just how we are wired. Ignore those thoughts. Listen to this, or at least try this. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It even takes that out of it. You don't even have to drive there anymore. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge, because that's a big thing as well. Because sometimes finding the right therapist is like finding the right pair of jeans. Unless you're at Old Navy, everything looks great there. But no, all joking aside, discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/sobad today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/sobad. I'm really proud that they are a sponsor because I really, really personally do believe in therapy. But give it a shot. It always helps the show. But I think at the end of the day, it could really, really help you in the long run. And now back to the show.
Now you're in the situation where, you know, you are victimized again, or now you victimized a lot of people, because it's like you're just perpetuating the pattern in a different way.
Yeah. Ariana, you know, it's very interesting and how this has played out and how we'll see it play out. But in your, you know, in terms of recommendations of like when somebody's been betrayed so hard like this, where it's got to be shocking. You know, you talk about the Kaiser Soze moment and Usual Suspects of just like, holy shit. And she was directly in that with not only her boyfriend of 9 years, who they share a house together, pets together, but her new friend Raquel, who she's been to bat for time and time again. How does she go about ever trusting anybody in her life ever again? And this doesn't even have to do with reality television, but like, I would be looking over my shoulder nonstop of like, if that can be done to me in my own house, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't fully aware of it. That would, like, how does somebody work on that?
Well, I think that you know, and I have a lot of clients like come in hot, like having gone through a situation just like this, where kind of the world comes crumbling down. And I really felt for her, not only that, talk about an immense amount of grief all at once. And then Charlotte, her dog, like the real love of her life, like that was so sad. And so it's just,
and
too
then her
much-
grandma passes away in a couple episodes from now that we haven't seen yet.
God,
and
see?
This was all going on. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's one of the excuses he uses, where he's like, I couldn't do it. Well, you know, all this stuff was going on. I couldn't do that to her. But it's like, but you'll keep an affair going behind her back, which is potentially going to hurt her even more when it's revealed.
Right. And then she was with you being loyal when all the chaos from the restaurant and you were doing your thing with the band. And she, you know, from what we know, she wasn't cheating on him. So, but that's just an excuse. Like people will use it.
What's your favorite Tom Sandoval and the Most Extra song? What's your favorite? No, Jack.
None of
these. Is that your type of music? Is that your style of
mom.
Music, Lauren?
that was kind of funny. But yeah, to answer your question, and you know what, I honestly, and I'm, you know, I'm not religious, but I am spiritual. And I do think that I always ask my clients what their spiritual orientation is, not their religion, but because I do think that life will fucking hand you a bunch of shit all at once. Like that's a lot of grief to have at once, but that is a very, very like intense spring cleaning of like, hey, you're going to grieve some things. You're going to get rid of a lot of stuff that's not serving you. And I mean, you know, she's on that movie or whatever.
Yeah, so she's on a Lifetime. You know, so many cool things are happening. But yeah. It's this opportunity that life is making you change. And I was thinking about this idea of like, yeah, in a sense that like this is sucks that it happened, but in a sense, Sandoval was a huge block for her. Yeah. You know, is that now she's actually maybe able to be who exactly she should be. But the human heart doesn't really think in terms of that. Like we don't go around going, well, thank God this happened, so now I can really grow. Like we don't think about that at first because we are wrapped up in grief and shock and sadness. And, you know, just speaking of somebody that's been through divorce in my past, it's something that hits you at a lot of different times. You know, it's not something that's just like, well, I'm over that. Thank you. You know, like that thing comes back that haunts you. It affects other relationships in your life. And I just wonder for Ariana is like, how do you make sure you keep 2 feet on the ground and that you real? I mean, that's so sad that it's okay to love again, which sounds so cheesy. But like, how do you keep yourself clear of that?
Well, yeah. And grief is not linear. It comes in layers and it's okay. Like you can have moments of grief and still be in a healthy relationship. I think that from something like this, if she was my client, I'd be like, okay, let's take a year off and focus on you, because that was a lot of giving of energy and all the grieving.
But you would recommend to take a year off from therapy? You'd be like, take a year off from
from dating. I'm sorry.
Oh,
from
okay. I was like, wait, you're like, yeah, we don't need therapy at all. Just good luck out there. Bye. Have fun. We'll see you in a year. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
see you next
absolutely
April.
Not. Absolutely not. No, I would say, so, you know, because there's such an intense need to focus on yourself and recover who you are and build up who you are when you have everything getting like kind of demolished in a way like that. Like your housing has changed. I don't know if they've done that yet, but like everything is shifting and reorganizing. So there's a huge opportunity to focus on yourself. And yeah, sometimes the life universe will do that because we're not strong enough to do it for ourselves. I guarantee if you've been with someone for 8 years, like there were red flags, and it's like you can ignore. I mean, because sometimes it's more comfortable than being like, well, I don't want to move. I don't want to start dating again. You know, I've done that in relationships where it's just like it's ostensibly like easier to stay, or it's all of that, when it's really not. So yeah. It's
I just wonder what that happening. Is in our mind, though, is like these lies that we tell ourselves. And I think a lot of it comes down to like sometimes laziness and selfishness, because we don't want to have those hard conversations because it's
our
easier
safety.
To like
our
yeah,
safety.
Yeah, just, yeah
you course. Know what I mean? Like we have a part of our brain, a very where the breathing and everything is associated, our heartbeat, the limbic system of our brain, that just wants to keep us safe. And that's where fears come from. Like, and so a lot of times our fears are not even real, or if we face them, it's like, oh, that's not even a big deal. But yeah, a lot of times we stay in holding patterns that don't serve us because we want to feel safe. And it's like, well, if we change, like change is scary, or I don't know if I could do that alone. We all have the opportunities for growth in that way.
Yeah. Watching Vanderpump Rules this season, though, are there other things that you've taken away? Because I think you watched a lot of episodes at once, or like over a weekend or stuff like that. Are there other things that stand out to you going through or watching it? Is there anything of like, oh, wow, like that's this or that's that? And then even to open up larger after that, I know you are a fan of the Housewives. I was just curious of some of your favorite characters on these reality shows, not Vanderpump Rules.
Okay, well, to answer your first part, again, like with the grieving of relationships, and that's such a big thing, like are the human experience does not, or like in our heart, speaking of like being in your heart, we do not like breakups. They're very, you know, threatening to the ego, and it can be a devastating experience. And then for someone that going on to or back to James, who has, you know, I mean, he seems like he's an alcoholic to me and has some, you know, very salient narcissistic personality traits. They don't do breakups well. Again, jumping right into another relationship, just like Sandoval, and like, oh, this is the love of my life. Trying,
yeah,
to,
and like, a very, and like, you're so beautiful, Ali. Oh, your clavicle. It's so amazing, Ali. Like, just so effusive in their every scene is touching her, like, yeah, petting her. It's very interesting.
Well, and then she's just being used. I think Lala is the one that says, like, she could be anyone. You're just, like, basically using. I think she says that at the Lisa threw a little bridal shower for,
oh,
like,
yeah,
for
Sheena,
I think
yeah.
That's when she, like, because, like, James was all drunk and acting up. And so, that's true. It's just kind of like, I can't tolerate this, and my ego is very wounded right now from you dumping me, so I'm going to get someone else immediately, rub it in your face, and literally try to numb out with this new girl. Just like, you know, because I can't tolerate my feelings of grief. And I'm not saying, like, grief is a hard feeling to move through and process. And it takes a community of people, and it also takes like really being okay, like tolerating. I mean, and like all addiction.
It also takes not being on a reality show, I bet. Like it's probably not the best to be on a reality show when you're moving through these really intense things.
Probably not. It's probably not a good idea to always be drunk. Like, and I mean, we know like that helps too. But like, you know, alcohol in any form of numbing out, it's just an inability to tolerate the present moment, which James really has a hard time doing. I mean, he, you know, every time he sees Raquel, which is like interesting, you know, but he's just like all triggered. And I think kind of Raquel a little bit gets off on that. But, and then.
Yeah. I mean, he really is. It keeps coming up of like, how obsessed he is with this. And even when the Sandoval stuff broke, which we have not seen yet in the new episodes that'll come out at the end of the season, he online was like literally losing his mind. And I just kept thinking, what about Allie, who's around James right now going like, why are you, I mean, like, this is bad, obviously, but you're in a relationship with me, not her anymore. So why is that? You know, I would think as somebody in a relationship with, you know, I would think I would be a little hurt potentially.
A little. And I mean, and I feel like in the last episode, Allie's getting sick of it. She's really kind of like,
doesn't seem like a dummy. That's the other thing. Yeah. She doesn't seem like, that's the part that I keep getting confused about, because she doesn't seem like a dummy, yet she's putting up with some like really wild behavior. And I just wonder what's that all about too. When somebody feels like they know better, they're even speaking to it in talking heads on the show. Mm-hmm. And she's like kind of making little jokes about it. Then I'm like, what is that thing that's keeping her there then, when this pattern of behavior keeps repeating itself with him?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things at play. When you meet someone like a narcissistic type or someone that has like an intense personality, they're so fun at first. They're so charming. They're so like engaging and magnetic. And so you get in, you know, you're in love with that and you want that back. You're like, where's that guy? Bring him back. Yeah. And it's like, that's not really what's going on. And then all this pain and, you know, character defects show up. And then the other thing is like, she's on a reality show. She's on a reality TV show. I mean, she could bow out right now, but like, I mean, she has that option and maybe she doesn't want to, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, hopefully everybody's there for the right reasons, as they say in the Bachelor franchise.
Really?
Yeah,
what would the right reasons be?
No, I mean, there is none in terms of by the way, that's what I always say about reality television. If you're on a reality TV show, you're already suspect. You know, you're already going to exhibit wild behavior at some point in your reality TV show career, or you won't keep coming back season after season. You're somewhat encouraged sometimes to have extreme behavior.
Oh, totally. You'll get kicked off if you don't. And I do think that it kind of is somewhat like placates this human like need that we have to be seen and heard. It really, I think that I see a lot of that. So without saying who it is, I used to live in Orange County. And it's just normal.
Already, Vicky Gunvalson. I'm just gonna say it right now. Yeah.
Well, you'll know it's not her from like what I say, but like, so I'm just normal, you know, getting my eyelashes done one Friday, and this woman that I would see all the time is there, and then she was on Housewives of OC. She was a new person at the time. Totally changed, like came in and was like, oh my, like talking to everyone about like the new season premiere and like how horrible. And then she's like, excuse me, like, can I like actually like take your appointment because, you know, stuff to do and I'm running late. And then I'm like, and then I figured it out with my, you know, esthetician. And so it's like, yeah, you could go, because I was fine for the rest of the day. But like, where all of a sudden did this shift in personality? It was like this delusion of grandeur. Like, now I'm this celebrity. You're on a show where something is going to, like, your world is probably going to crumble, because that's the only reason you're going to stay on.
By the way, your world's going to crumble. So yeah, you go ahead and take my last appointment. You're good. Yeah. Your world's going to fall apart in 6 months. So please. I mean, that's the thing, is like, these things are now modern day gladiators in a way, because mm-hmm. they're literally putting their emotional makeup on display. And usually, if the reality show is doing its job, will completely beat you down. Like, that is something that we expect from our reality television shows. And that's why I think Scandoval really kind of reminds us that, like, whoa, like, it's been a while since something really big, like big and emotional. Like, we see it, you know, we're so desensitized to Housewives in so many ways. Mm-hmm. But that's why when something like this, it really stands out, because you're like, oh, a 9-year relationship. There's so much pain. He was presenting himself as this other guy over here. Was that performative? It kind of reignites your initial love of reality. But it's like reality television on steroids, because then you go back and watch another reality show. I've been trying to watch other things. And you're like, this ain't hitting like Sandoval. This ain't hitting. I need somebody to like punch somebody. I mean, you know, our minds get so skewed towards what we expect from these people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I like this ain't hidden. And it's true. I mean, because in a way it is shocking. I think performative is the key word there, because especially with Sandoval, there's a lot of performative stuff going
yeah.
on.
Yeah, and I would say a lot of performative. Yes.
Even with how he was relating to Ariana, it never hit like genuine, especially after a while. It wasn't hitting like that genuine to me. And it's kind of like people that have like more, and I'm not saying that he is, I'm just talking about personality types, but people that have a sociopathic type of thing, they can be very performative. It's like, what do you need me to be in this situation so you think I'm the greatest or whatever, or so I could just stop you from thinking anything. They're very performative people. And then there are other, but the lack of empathy, it can rise to the surface like this situation.
Yeah, completely. But what are some of your favorite reality show characters from your past in watching these shows?
Okay, well, I do like Bethany Frankel, just in general, like reality TV.
Do you like her TikTok? Do you like how she's always expressing her opinions on social media now?
I mean, sometimes it's a little intense, but, and then I mean, I love Lisa Vanderpump. And I also, like, those are two people that I think have used reality TV to their advantage. It's like,
is a good word. I feel like both of them have used, but not just reality television. I think you've used people in, like, I think Lisa uses that cast of Vanderpump Rules. I think she genuinely likes them, but I don't think she genuinely really at the end of the day cares. I think she's thrilled that this has put them back on top. And Bethany's another person that I found interesting, because I've really loved Bethany in the past, but I always don't like how she, you know, would degrade the experience of being a housewife until it serves her. And then she wants back on that wagon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But they're just entertaining, but yeah. And there is, okay. You know who else? Not that there was a main character, but I liked, Housewives of New York, the one with the crazy eyes,
Ramona,
Ramona's husband. Like, I feel like he's the most underrated.
Ramona's ex-husband.
Ex-husband, Mario, most underrated house husband.
Wait, you want to give Mario a shout out right now? By the way, Mario, if you're listening, Lauren, I'll give you her information.
But their dynamic, he was just so like chill about, like, for the most part.
But then he was cheating on her too.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there's that too.
I'm now thinking about Bethany, but what is that in a person where, you know, I always think with these people, it's like they get to the mountaintop. Like, we saw Bethany in the original seasons of Housewives, and she was like hustling. She was starting her brand, and she actually built it into something huge where she sold it and she became wealthy. And we saw when it wasn't always the case with her. And it was this insane moment of showing all this hard work and passion and stick to it, you know, just sticking to something. And then now it's like, instead of enjoying that, it feels like she always needs that attention economy. She needs eyes on her. Mm-hmm. When I sometimes think, well, isn't the whole point of doing that? So you can go escape and live this amazing life. But it never seems to be the case with these people.
You would think. And then, and that's what I did like about her so much, is that she had this underdog quality and, like, you know, hustled and built this empire. And she's funny. At least I haven't watched anything of her recently, but I do like her sense of humor. And, but I do think, like, they go into a lot of her childhood, you know, and like her, how she grew up and, like the things with her dad and money being up and down, chaotic, and then her mom was gonna like write some book. I mean, that's a lot of trauma she's been through. And I feel like, you know, part of me kind of saw myself in her. Like, I'm like, that's a lot of, you know, that's intense to have, you know, your parents do all of that. But I do think that when, let's say, I'm not saying anything about her directly or anyone at all that I've mentioned so far, not saying anything directly, but I do think that if you don't resolve like your childhood trauma, it will show up in your relationships, and you will, what ostensibly looks like addiction to drama. It's kind of like, at this point she could go whatever, live her best life and not, but there's something that's like feeding that maybe in not the most adaptive way. So there could be that. I don't know what she's doing. You know what I mean? We're all healing at our own pace. But
at our own pace, guys, go slow down. You got your own pace to deal with. I was thinking a lot about men and women. because just of this situation. I mean, we always think about men and women regardless, but in your work, what do you know, like the key differences between men and women? I know that's such a broad question, but I keep thinking about like these personalities, especially on reality television shows, that keep popping up, you know, these certain types of personalities or these certain types of behavior that men do and certain types of behavior that women do. And we see these kind of highlighted on these shows. You know, is there anything that pops to mind when I say that?
Well, I always talk in terms of, and because I talk in terms of masculine and feminine, you know, especially if I'm dealing with like a gay couple, and I'm like, because there's a masculine energy and a feminine energy. Sometimes that's true with like heterosexual couples, like the typical masculine qualities the woman has, and vice versa. Like, what do you specifically what is, like, mean, like you, well, or what I do you think observe?
What is it about? What is it about men that seems like it's the same pattern? We got Schwartz cheating in the past. We got Sandoval. I mean, Schwartz, you know, I keep talking about, like he mentioned in the earlier show of like, oh, I don't know about dating. It would feel like cheating on Katie, even though we're divorced. And I'm like, but you actually did cheat on Katie. So why did like you, it seems like something that you were really adept at. Like, why would it feel weird? You know, it's like you got that. You got Kyle Cook on Summer House. You had Mario on Real Housewives of New York. You have all of these men that tend to just go to. I'm just trying to think about what it is about men that really think of themselves in certain situations where women seem to. Not saying that women don't cheat. I'm definitely not saying that, but I'm saying it seems to be more rare than all of the examples of men. I'm just trying to understand the differences of that. I mean, I'm not sure if there's been studies, but it just seems like
do
women take into account men's feelings more than men take into account women's feelings? I know, by the way, if you're listening at home and rolling your eyes, I'm sorry. I'm trying to learn, folks.
No. And by the way, men cheat just as much as women, or women cheat just as much as men. And there's new studies coming out that women cheat more. And
it's just they're better at it. Is that what you're?
Or they just
don't get caught.
They don't get caught, or it's emasculating for people to find out that your woman cheated on you. But like, women can be a victim, and that's okay. There's that piece too. So the guy won't, you know, talk about if it doesn't get out there, you know. And that's just, I'm not saying that that's a good thing. I'm just saying that some men find that emasculating, and they'd rather just forget, like sweep it under the rug type of thing. That's some of the new research that's being done. But men cheat when they don't feel appreciated, typically from the research, or the masculine entity in the relationship doesn't, when they don't feel appreciated or emasculated, or they feel emasculated, or they're not getting the type of attention that they need, typically like physical attention. And women cheat when they feel like their emotional needs aren't met, when they're not seen and heard. And I mean, I hear it all the time. He doesn't hear me. He doesn't. And, you know, I mean, like, he's not fucking listening to me. And so, but I mean, I can say, like, if I don't feel heard, if I feel heard, I'm like super turned on. I'm like, oh my God, he listened. Like, it's just, you know what I mean? But if it's not, I'm like, you know, I understand that. I have estrogen coursing through my brain. And so that, you know, it'll either trigger me or turn me on. And then with men, being appreciated is a big, I mean, what do you think? Like, I think, I mean, from what I hear,
there's that thing where it's like, of course, somebody telling you you're good, or that you're likable, or that you know, of course, that's all, you know, like, look, listen, guys just want to be told we're pretty. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, that's what we basically, so it's like really nice to hear those compliments. But I think sometimes it's interesting because we will take those superficial quick compliments more than a deep relationship. A multi-year relationship will sometimes give more credence to those quick hits than a long-term relationship. It's always like something new and shiny will always seem to catch a guy's eye.
And that's why I'm always situations. That's why I'm always telling couples, it's like, you have to continuously date your partner, and you have to, I mean, you have to, with all your might and strength, like, do your work so you're not getting, even if your partner triggers you, do that work on your own, and then come back 3 days later and talk about it. And I know that's so, because like, I mean I have those moments where I'm like, I need to talk about this now, I'm pissed. But if you want to keep that alive, and you want to keep that connection, that it's just better to do it. It takes so much discipline. It takes so much inner work, but I think that it's worth it to do that and keep your relationship. I mean, you know, you watch the Chris Rock special, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Okay. You know, he talks about the difference between dating a 25-year-old and a 40-year-old. Yes. It's like, oh, like the 25-year-old's like, oh, daddy, like, look at my high heels or whatever. And it's like, do that. And I mean, some of my female like clients at first, they get mad and I'm like, no, like you, that's a form of appreciation. Just be fun and sexy. And not, I'm not saying to do that all the time. Yeah, but
then doesn't that then build up hatred towards the male because you're like, I'm doing role play all of a sudden?
No,
I'm,
you know,
not being my authentic self.
No, you can be your authentic self and you could have needs and they could be met, but they also need to be done like not in the, I don't think it's always, and sometimes this just has to happen. It's like the heat of the moment and we need to go at it and like fight it out. But I do think on the regular, if you do your work, like why is this triggering me? Why? And if it's something that's triggering you, it's from the past. Like if it's hysterical, it's historical. It's from the past. It's like, it's there for you to do, like, because if your partner isn't doing it, someone else will, but our partner is a mirror for us in a lot of ways of like unhealed trauma. So it's like, work on yourself first and do that work, like have a little bit of pause and then be like, hey, you know what? Can we talk right now? It's not a big deal, but that actually hurt my feelings or whatever it did.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely, yeah, you're right. It's just very, when do you know it's okay? Well, I always think like, do you, like even with Tom, there must've been a moment where Tom knew that his relationship with Ariana wasn't working. He was already checked out completely and knew for him it was over. Well, I mean, we'll find out, I guess, but it'll be interesting to find out. But most time when people get caught cheating, they end up begging to get their partners back. And that's not what we're, that's not what's happening here. And I wonder,
but that's what I mean. Like to him, the relationship's fine. Like I'm getting my ego.
Yeah. I'm getting, everything's good for me.
You're basically on the way out, Ariana. And I'm doing my thing where I'm filtering someone in and using someone else. I mean, it's kind of like James is doing the same thing, but in a more like histrionic way, but it's the same thing. It's like, okay, I don't want to grieve. I don't have the tolerance, the ego tolerance to grieve a relationship or, you know, admit I was wrong about anything. So what I'm going to do is like, you know, let this kind of drift away. Ariana has to, if you're with someone for 9 years, you know, what's going on and whatever. That's why I'm saying with her, like life did her, the universe did her a favor and is clearing a lot of stuff out. And she'll, if she's not seeing that right now, she will. But, you know, and then with Tom, or I'm sorry. Yeah. With Tom, what I'm saying is like, I think he's probably like, this is fine for me. I'm on to the next. And then, you know, Raquel's releasing these statements like, I'm just going to work on myself and my self-care. Da, da,
yeah, but I'm like, show me the work. Like, that's what, like, everybody says they're going to work on themselves, but I doubt sometimes any of these people are working on themselves. Like, that's what's great about reality television shows is they're always they're always telling us, not showing us. Mm-hmm. And like, nobody, they'll always say they're doing the work and I'm doing the hard work. And then they're like, I always know that they're never doing the hard work. Jax Taylor was a prime example of that on Vanderpump Rules in older seasons. Also, I just wanted to, as we start winding down here, there's a few, I remember going through like some of my most traumatic moments is that the body or the mind protects you in a way where looking back on it, I'm like, how did I get through that? Like, I don't think I was getting a couple hours of sleep at night. Like all the, I was thinking about like some of these really traumatic events and going like, wow, I don't think I could deal with that now. But when you're in it, you just kind of go, your body and your mind protects you to kind of just keep moving. And it doesn't mean it's like fun or good like that, but like you're in a fugue state almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you don't want to constantly be in an adrenalized state and where cortisol levels are constantly spiked, but that is, you know, fight and flight mode of the stress responses. We have fight, flight, fawn, and freeze. And so that's fight, flight mode. When you're fighting or flight, you know, and then you're that adrenalized state and that's what gets you through it. And then you look back and you're like, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it really is that looking back and going, wow. Listen, Lauren, this went way too quick. I'm already going to ask you back. I need to hear your Kardashian take.
Oh my God. I'm Beverly so Hills. This offline,
Liz, will you come back? Cause there's so much that this went I mean, this feels like it went 10 minutes. So Lauren, how do we find out more about you? Like, how do we find out? I mean, like, there's potentially some people in Los Angeles that might want to work with you and stuff. What, I mean, what do you recommend? Or how do we know when we have things to work on? I mean, I know we know, but like, why would we seek somebody like you out?
If you want to thrive in every area of your life, if you want to work on your imposter syndrome, that's one of the things I specialize in, as I was talking about. But I love helping people, you know, through the transformation process. And there's always something to work on. You know, I always want to help people with the highest and best versions of themselves. And at any given moment, that looks different. So
is it really gratifying for you?
It's so gratifying. I love it. I love what I do. So, but and to go,
each day is going to be different too. Each day is
every day.
Challenge. Yeah.
Oh, it's never the same, which I also love. But I'm at Mental Health Hacker on Instagram, and that's like my main platform. So there, and then my website is Lauren Clayton Total Health. But if you DM me, and especially if you say you're a friend of Ryan's, and I will get back to you for sure.
Yeah, and you guys, I'll put all of that in the show notes. And I'm definitely going to have Lauren back on again, because this is just, to me, I'm like, oh, I'm just like a kid in a candy store. I'm like, this is so great to be able to put language to some of these thoughts. And I know I can sometimes go at like kind of a cutting humorous slant. So it's nice. It's nice to class up the joint sometimes, basically. but anyways, Lauren, I really appreciate you being here. I hope you had a good time. I hope this was a good use of your time.
Yes.
And I look forward to having you back on again and again. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I can't wait to be on again. Betches.